I'm going to call the regular meeting of the Oceano Community Services District to order Wednesday, July 10th, 6 p.m. We have a roll call, please.
Director Gibson. Director Villa.
Here.
Director Fulham.
Here.
Vice President Austin.
Here.
I'm sorry, Vice President White.
Here.
President Austin.
Here. Okay. You'll all join me in the flag salute, please.
Do it again.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. So, agenda review. Is there anything on the agenda anyone wants to change or comment on?
A couple of items, Madam President. One is the ordering of items today. We may need to change. There's some technical difficulties with the presentation, the audiovisual equipment. AGP is bringing another laptop down from Morro Bay as we speak. Might not get here until sometime between 6:30 and 6:45. And there's two presentations, 9A and 9C, that are, the utilization of the screen and everything for presentations will be important. So my recommendation.
9B first.
Yeah, we could do 9B and even 10A prior to 9A and 9C. But okay. Let's go ahead if we
we'll
might.
Go through, then we get to 9. We'll
just
switch.
Play it by ear depending on when the equipment, okay. Because it would be nice to have 9A as soon as the equipment is here. And then I think Ms. Cassiola has a change.
And then President Austin, members of the board, we revised our recommendation in item 8B. We provide a modified staff report, and we have added disbursements. We had cut off AP last Wednesday, the 3rd, and a lot of invoices came as the 1st moved along. So we added $7,502.72 of added warrants. Also, today in our final review with Pavo, he added he wrote in what the items were for over $1,000, and that's also handed out. So we did that in the final review. And at the appropriate time, the recommendation would be for the approval of staff recommendations in item 8B as amended. So if there's any other questions.
Okay, very good.
Do we need a motion?
Well, we're on here. We need to know. Well, we're going to go back. We're just an agenda review.
Yeah, but so I would approve the agenda as amended because with the additional items that.
Okay, so we'll make a motion to approve the agenda review as amended by staff. Of the
I
agenda.
So move.
Second.
When will public comment take place?
I will announce when public comment. So it's been moved and seconded. Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Pulham?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay, so the agenda is presented. There is no closed session, so now this will be public comment for items that are not on the agenda. 3 minutes, I mean, within the purview of the board.
My name is Giselle Naylor. I'm an Oceano homeowner and a Cambria property owner. I would ask that at some point you make the items that you're discussing public, since we don't have a public recording of the change in the order of agenda items. Also, I've been continually requesting of the wastewater treatment plant records of breaks in the line and accounting. And I've been asking for over a year to get those public records, and apparently they don't have any list of categories of records that they keep, so you can't know what types of records they have that you can ask for. So I would ask for you to intercede on that. And also, during the rains, I got brown water coming out of my bathtub, and Tony, the guy that is in charge of repairing the water lines and the sewer lines? Is he in charge of repairing the sewer lines in Oceano? I need a copy of work orders that took place during the rainy season when there were heavy rains last season. Today's July 2019. You'll remember there were heavy rains during which there were breaks and leaks in the pipes. I need a list of pipes and the locations where the breaks occurred and the work orders, because ultimately I want to know how the lines from the street to my house contaminated my bath water. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to special presentations and reports. We can shut that door for a minute. So I'll call Field Supervisor Tony Marcino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Marcino. So Lopez is currently at 58.4% full, which is 28,833 acre feet. We had zero SSOs for the month of June. State water deliveries year to date is 10.98 acre feet. Lopez deliveries is 112 acre feet, and we've pumped 131 acre feet since the beginning of the year. We had 10 work orders, 21 USAs, 8 customer service calls. We had one after hour call out. It was for a house valve that was getting replaced that broke, so we had to shut off the customer on our end so they could get it replaced. The valve on Vista has been replaced, going to a hydrant. Paving has been complete. 1189 Pike, we got a tie-in for all the fire protection for that, the three buildings there. We had door hangers. As you know, well 8 went down. Well 4 got camera'd. And the waiting on recommendations, but after seeing it live, it looks like the casing needs to get scrubbed just because of the age of it and the debris that's on it. For 311, we had 24 311 tickets. There was a hydrant that got hit on pier, and we did find out who did it, and it's getting taken care of. We've already replaced it and put a new one in service. We had a drainage, I had a drainage meeting with the contractors and me doing the work to kind of go over everything regarding all our utility relocation. And there's a few change orders that are coming down. We'll find out most likely tomorrow what the cost is going to be. Fog's going very well for Casey. The jetter's parts are about a week out to get that repaired. I attended an OES PG&E safety, basically public safety, power shutoff and power outage planning. What was really interesting about that was the duration of an outage, if it occurs, if it lasts more than a day. There's a lot of planning that goes involved with that. A lot of resources, a lot of things to think about, and it was a pretty good eye-opener. But any questions?
Anyone have any questions?
Yeah, I was wondering if you got any 311 notices for the fireworks litter after the 4th. I heard there were a number of areas where there were big piles.
Yes, we have a couple of those, and I believe I have about 3 more I got to take care of. Yes, we did.
So how much time do you think you're spending on cleaning up the fireworks litter?
You know, we just document the trash for cleanup. We just code it to trash when we do the 311 tickets.
Okay. Do you know what happened, I think it was yesterday, at on Wilmar Street between 24th and 25th? I saw one of the OCSD trucks just pulling away from there and a bunch of fire trucks. And
on 24th Street?
On Wilmar, at the house that's going to be torn down.
Oh, yes. So my guys, just reminded me, my guys talked to me. There is a building or a home that's on an acre lot, roughly. And my understanding is fire is going to get some training with that. So they were fire was looking at it with OCSD. B because of the debris, the fire, there's a building there that they want to utilize for training.
Okay, that's interesting. I thought something might have happened there.
No, it's just the building itself, it looks like it's condemned to me. I don't know the whole story to it, but the Fire Authority possibly do some training here real soon.
Yeah, so what's going to happen with that? I know from the Oceano Advisory Council is it's going to be torn down. I don't know when, but they're going to put in, I think it's 10 or 12 affordable housing units on that big piece of land. So that's coming.
Good.
That's good. The fire department can get some use out of it in the meanwhile.
Yes. Absolutely.
Do you know if they're going to burn it or just use it first?
This is coming from my guys. I didn't hear firsthand, but I would assume that they're planning on starting a fire and using it for real-world training, as a house fire.
Okay. Find out.
Oh, and the fire hydrant on Pier, is that the same one that got hit a month or so ago? Or
31 days ago, yes.
So I think we talked about speaking with
the property owner,
county, or somebody about relocating it. Has that happened?
We've spoken with county staff regarding the ability to put bollards up, and were denied. So we are getting to the point that the option is just to decommission the hydrant. We can appeal to the county, I think, now based on the number of times that hydrant has been hit, to seek an exception. I think the preferable approach would get to be allowed underneath the variance or an exception to be able to put in the bollards. And
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. No, Chief Lieberman. Mr. Ogren, do you have a report?
Certainly, President Austin, members of the board, and the public. Real quick, the generator bids are due tomorrow, so we'll be opening bids tomorrow afternoon. It was originally scheduled for July 2nd, and we pushed it out until tomorrow in order to respond to some questions from contractors on what the licensing requirements were to bid on the job. A little bit of a unique project, and so we coordinated with the state contractors licensing board in order to get some interpretations and help on that. Issued some addendums for clarifications, and then extended the bids until tomorrow. I've also today attended the Zone 3 TAC meetings and working with Rio Grande, Grover, Pismo Beach on updating the Northern Cities Management Area strategic plan. That's all part of the stipulations and judgment. Similar to Tony, also covered some of the PG&E shutdowns, and those are concerning because PG&E has indicated they could shut down power for as long as a week. Some of the discussions have been relating to their exposure to liabilities on fires. There's a lot of discussion about how the state might respond to this, but obviously having power shut down for a week would have a significant impact on the ability to deliver water. So that was also a part of discussions with Zone 3. It's a unique type of an emergency situation. So along with our neighboring agencies in the county, we're going to be looking at how we might have to adapt some of our emergency responses. And then most recently, sort of in the most recent correspondence and specifically relating to July 4th, hope everybody had a great July 4th holiday, or as we're all proud to be Americans for July 4th, even if I heard it was a little bit more chaotic in Oceano than usual. But the questions from Chief Lieberman were regarding prohibitions or the allowance of being able to use fireworks, that he had indicated that the county has prohibitions except for in Oceano, San Miguel, and Templeton. And the basic flavor of ordinances that OCSD has previously adopted is really with regard to the issuance of permits for safe and sane fireworks. There's no prohibitions that we have seen on the books in terms of restricting when people can use safe and sane, and I think that's why the general interpretation is it's allowed throughout the year. Chief Lieberman was seeking some sort of ordinances that sort of made it permissive, and I think really the issue is it's permissive until it's prohibited. But in any case, Chief Lieberman has certainly gotten a number of inquiries, so he's following up with both us and the county on what some of the underlying ordinances and resolutions have been adopted in the past. And then the remaining items are agenda items, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Anything for Wawa's report?
I was just going to add that everybody blames Oceana, but in downtown Arroyo Grande, in Old Town Arroyo Grande, they were sending off bottle rockets. And that comes from the fire chief. He said he couldn't believe it when he saw them in downtown Arroyo Grande with all those old buildings. So
I couldn't believe that there were at least 60 people on the intersection of Paso Robles and 24th Street, closing off Paso Robles Street, blocking traffic so that they could light off illegal fireworks in the middle of the street and occasionally letting cars through.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you. Anybody? Okay, we'll go now to our board of directors and outside committee reports. Director Villa.
I'd like to state that today I went to the IWMA meeting there in San Luis Obispo. It was interesting. It was very educational. We learned a lot about wishful recycling, what plastics we should place in the recycling bin and which we shouldn't. And I learned that I, you know, committed a lot of sins, innocently. But they, the gist of the meeting was that they decided to begin working on a draft for an ordinance that's going to, you know, ban all polystyrene, which is a styrofoam, with some exceptions to the packaging, you know, that you get in the mail and stuff from Amazon or whatever you order. And on that, they, I thought it was pretty cool that they added also the styrofoam they use for meat products and marine buoys, which are the plastic floatable things on there. And what else? Egg cartons.
You say they're going to leave?
They added that.
They added that to
Yeah, because it's when people think of styrofoam, they just think of, you know, styrofoam, maybe the cups, plates, restaurants.
Were there any other types of plastic added, like plastic utensils?
They wanted to add that, but it was like they were worried about, you know, having a lot of, like, controversy and people not really wanting to do that. For now, they're going to do this.
So just and the, then, just
yeah,
polystyrene.
To get, you know, in steps, incremental steps. And they have talked about educating the public so that they'd be more receptive to doing all the single-use plastics, which is where we should go because it's... it's awful what it's doing to the environment.
Okay. President, also, if you don't mind, I could probably add a little bit of additional information because I was also at the IWMA meeting today as their legal counsel. There's different types of polystyrene, from what I understand. There's what we think of as styrofoam, but then there's also the types of that are in like the red Solo cups and this type. So what the board, the question really was to if the authority is going to consider a ban on single-use plastics of any kind, how do they want that to look? And so the direction that staff received was to come back with an ordinance in September at their regular meeting because the August meeting was canceled. So to come back in September with a broad polystyrene-based draft ordinance, including the other items as identified by Director Villa, and then following that, then consider having staff come back after such an ordinance would be adopted with to consider a more broad-based ordinance in regards to single-use plastics of all types, to consider the impact of straws and cups. So they are going to do it, but what they want to do is they want to really consider these things as a phased approach.
Thank you.
If IWMA is looking at a draft ordinance in September, would they then be looking at potential adoption in October?
Yes.
Okay. Which would then, because, you know, solid waste and recyclables is clearly within the jurisdiction of this district. So after the introduction of the draft ordinance, then we can make sure to get it placed on your agenda in the event that your board wants to provide recommendations to IWMA.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Okay. Vice President White?
Nothing.
Director Rapoval?
I have nothing.
President Austin? I have, we had an ad hoc committee meeting, Shirley Gibson and I, and Pavo, and we've drawn up a draft of the RFP, the request for proposal for the mural art. And we gave our draft to Pavo, and it went to, I think the office staff is looking at it to formalize, and she actually sent us the example of what the city of San Luis Obispo asked for in their RFP. So we're going to meet next week and review that, and then once we have it all formalized and ready, I think, do we bring it to the board for approval?
That's correct. You come back to the board.
Come back to the board, and then we'll be ready to get it out to the public to start receiving bids. We're going to get it to everyone that's been mentioned, and then also to the San Luis Arts Council. I think there's a place that has a lot of artists.
Yeah, the city of San Luis Obispo's approach was to first do a request for qualifications in order to make sure that there's a broad advertisement for artists who would be interested. Mm-hmm. And then once those qualifications and a select number, the highest ranking qualified individuals, then would be asked to actually develop proposals. So it's really a kind of a two different step process. The city's process was developed for all of the artwork that was developed for, like, the utility boxes and, mm-hmm. You know, some of the street art that they have throughout the city. So.
Okay, that's.
Could I add something?
Yeah.
I just happened to be at the new Ephraim's restaurant in San Luis Obispo, connected to the one in Oceana. And it has an incredible mural across about a wall about as big as that. It's just incredible.
What's San Luis?
No, it's sort of Latino in nature, but it's got John Wayne in it. It's got the Cisco Kid in it. It's got it's got Lucille Ball in it. It's got a whole bunch of dogs
it's all
in
Hollywood.
It. You have to see it. It's just, it's very, very well done in the kind of in the historic, and I'm trying to think of the artist, the early Latino artists that did work in Los Angeles and Mexico City, and I can't think of the name of the great artists, but it's just really, really, really interesting.
Diego Rivera?
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of, yeah. Anyway, so I just thought I went, wow. Yeah, so I have no idea who did it. I'm just passing it on because it was pleasant and amusing. And I suspect that some of the other faces might belong to the family, Ephraim's
yes,
family.
Yes, I think they have it down here, too, with some of their families. Yeah.
Anyway, and I'll shut up.
Okay, all right. Is there any public comment on the staff reports or the special committee reports?
With respect to the use of ad hoc committees into making decisions, I have an issue because when I went to the statutes, I could find no rules or regulations related to the types of public records that ad hoc committees should keep. So in the past, we've had ad hoc committees on whether we should sell our water to communities outside Oceano. There's no record of who was at the committee, what the decision was. There's no obligation to make a record or a summary of what was said at the ad hoc committee meeting or who the members of the ad hoc committee meeting are. So I think when you create ad hoc committee meetings, there needs to be some policy set as to how you're going to keep a record of, you know, expenditure of funds, any decisions made to the expenditure of funds. That's just an example. And also to the date and times and notice to the public where the ad hoc committee meetings are going to take place. Because it's not just, oh, you know, artwork. Should we put artwork here or there? How, you know, it's how should we expend public funds and how should we use public resources? It, you know, there is no ad hoc. There's no such thing in the statutes. Ad hoc means we just throw out any type of record keeping or guidelines according to the statutes. And I would recommend a policy that this district follow the state procedures for record keeping. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, but you should have a records retention policy, and you should have a list of the categories of records that each agency or, you know, sub-agency keeps in order to help the public keep an idea of what's going on. What is their government entity doing, and how are they spending the money?
Okay, any other public comment? Do you have something?
I just want to respond real quick that with respect to ad hoc committees, no decisions are made at an ad hoc committee level. An ad hoc committee is a less than a quorum of the board of directors. There are no expenditure of funds at the ad hoc committees. The district does have a records retention policy, but there is an important point in the message here is that board members, whether you're developing documents in an ad hoc basis, or whether you have emails on your personal email account, those are all still subject to records retention policies. And it's always a good idea to CC district staff or to CC a district email, but board members are subject to records retention requirements, and certainly that includes personal emails and other district documents that are developed. But the district does have a records retention policy. We do adhere to it, and if we have requests for public information, you will see from time to time where we'll copy board members to confirm whether you have any applicable public documents.
Thank you, Mr. Irwin. Okay, we'll move on now to item number 8, the consent agenda. Minutes for June 26th and the approval of cash disbursements as amended. Does anyone have any questions or anything? I'll open it up to public comment on the consent agenda items. The review and approval of minutes for June 26th and the cash disbursements. Seeing none, we get a motion on.
I make a motion we approve the consent agenda items as amended.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Can we get a roll call, please?
Vice President White.
Yes.
Director Villa.
Yes.
Director Repovo.
Yes.
President Olson.
Yes. Okay, that brings us to we'll go to item 9B.
I would, let's go to 10A.
10A, okay. Yeah. Move on to item 10A, and that is a consideration of a recommendation to approve a resolution to collect delinquent customer accounts on the 2019-20 property tax bills. So, did you have a staff report on this?
Yeah, President Austin, members of the board, we have item 10A. It's the hearing to collect delinquent customer accounts on the 2019-20 property taxes. The district has the ability to do this through a state statute and has been doing it with the county for the past 8 years. The timeline has been attached. The notices were posted in the Tribune on the 26th and July 5th. The customers were notified with the attached letter, and similar to last year, only solid waste bills were outstanding. We had no water or sewer outstanding bills. And the list was provided by South County Sanitary Services and is also attached with the properties. And the resolution will be sent to the county auditor before August 15th if your board so approves. So if there's any other questions.
I have a question. I have any questions on this? Is there any public comment on item 10A? Okay, seeing none, then can we get a motion?
I move that we approve the resolution to collect delinquent customer accounts on the next property tax bills.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Apollon?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
President Weston?
Yes. Okay, now do we want to go to 9B?
B, yes. Again, Ms. Cassiola.
Talk slow.
So this is the review of the 2018-19 budget status as of June 30th, 2019. It's fairly consistent with the predicted estimates used for your preliminary budget for the 2019-20 budget, and we also had a slide, but it's been printed out. It's probably the third one up.
This one here?
Yeah, it's just a summary. So in the general fund, we received $50,000 more in property taxes than we expected. In expenditures, we saw large savings. Most of this was generated from postponing the hiring of the new general manager and for the current general manager going part-time. These expenditures from the administrative fund are then passed down to the expenditures or the other expenditure funds, so fire, lighting, water, wastewater, and garbage. Through the admin allocation, so we'll see a similar savings in those funds. Those are most of the savings we saw in fire and lighting. There was a little bit of savings in energy since the energy watch team came and replaced some LED lights for us. In the facilities fund, we always use $15,000 as a benchmark for our public facilities fees, which are generated off of development, and the county collects those for us and then sends them over. And we have an agreement with them. And it came over about $3,000 over. So we're right around $18,000 this year. And we were up last year as well. So that's good news. The expenditures in the facilities fund, this is also including the encumbrance for the emergency project. The variance came over $14,000. So that savings helped as well. Then in our enterprise funds, the water fund, the revenues are coming under budget against our target revenues that were projected out in with the 2015 rate increase. Luckily, our expenditures in the water fund are down, so that saving is helping. But it's important to note that the savings occurred because we made the state water budget to use the county deposit, and that the state water will also increase next year. So whatever we save there will be used in the fund balance available. We predicted the fund balance available in the water fund for the preliminary 2019-20 budget to be over $300,000, and it will be coming in lower than that, and that is from the increase of funds that we had to give to the county for the Highway 1 relocation program. Personnel costs related to hiring the operant training we hired in the second quarter, and then the shortfall in revenues that we were talking about earlier. So wastewater funds, the revenues are also falling a little bit short, but those are seen in the savings that we got from the administrative allocation savings in the sewer fund, and also the personnel costs. Garbage fund also had a shortfall, but that's mainly due to the timing of the franchise fees payments we get from South County Sanitary Services. They pay us the month after they receive them, so we'll still receive another payment from them for their June collections. So then we also have the encumbrances that will roll forward to the 2019-20 budget, and those are on page 32. So we have the revenues for both the WRRP, the Water Resource Reliability Program grant, and the emergency generator grant that we got from the California Nuclear Preparedness Grant. But there's also expenditures that will encumber for both those projects. The expenditure for Gabi research for the survey for the special tax for the fire and emergency services special tax that the district is going out for. And that will also roll over.
I was wondering why that rolls over, because don't we have to pay that soon, I would think?
Yeah, so we are putting it as an encumbrance so that when it does come into the next budget, there's a line item for it, and it came from the past, 2018-19. So we're making a line item for it. So it's not budgeted in our preliminary budget that we've adopted, but it's being encumbered for our final budget that we will adopt in August 30th. Is there anything else
you want? Okay. Yeah.
Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, and then another expenditure will be the North Swing Highway 1 design that we have still out for, we haven't finished or completed for the waterline replacement projects. And then the last expenditure is the GSI Water Solutions annual report for the Northern Cities Management Area. So that will also roll over. And yeah, with that, are there any more questions or line items? That was just a summary. I didn't.
Any questions, anyone? So is this, you just.
So on, in terms of recommendation number A, which is to review the status as of June 30th, as Carrie had mentioned, the numbers are pretty consistent with the quarterly reviews that were previously provided to the board. And the concern, again, is the water fund had the shortfall in revenues is looking to be greater. We're doing some additional analysis. There's a good chance that the shortfall will not be as high as $182,000, but that's the number that we have right now. So that's just no action necessary on the fourth quarter budget update, but the action is appropriate on B, which is to approve the encumbrances that are included in Exhibit A.
Okay.
After public comment.
Okay, why don't we have public comment on this?
Giselle Naylor, Cambria property owner and Oceano homeowner. I've been asking for over a year now from Jeremy Gent, who is the director of the South San Luis Obispo County wastewater treatment plant, where the money's going. And I was informed by Amy, the receptionist, that they don't have any records. They don't have any way of identifying the categories of records they keep. I want copies of work orders.
This is for
and
the
receipts.
Excuse me. This is for the sanitation district. It's not in our. This would be something you'd bring to the meeting of the South County Sanitation District.
Is that the SSLOCSD?
Yes, yeah, South SLOCO.
And what does that stand for?
It's South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. And
their next
meeting will be
about.
Here in
And
July.
Jeremy Gent is the director,
yes,
is that right?
That's
okay,
correct.
So we're on the same
so
page.
So you need to bring your comments about them to that board, because we don't have any.
Carrie has just mentioned that you've got a shortfall, right, of how much money for repairing the lines, or what's the $200,000 shortfall for?
Madam Chair,
yes.
The appropriate would be for public comment, and then once public comment is concluded, then we'll be glad to respond to questions.
Okay, go ahead and finish your, just direct your public
okay,
comment.
Okay, so my point was that if you're trying to get some kind of idea by looking at their public records of how they're spending public money, they're behind locked gates. Jeremy Gent, for over a year, has refused to provide access to those public records or even begin to tell the public, how can I find out how much money you're spending on, you know, how much money you're spending on and what it's being spent on?
Again, that's a different board. That has nothing to do with the ocean. I mean,
well, we're paying for it. Oceano homeowners are paying for it. So I'll just, maybe you could help push it along. You've been here, your family's been here since for many decades in real estate and development, so I would think you'd know how to help push that along, Linda Guyton. Thank you.
Is there any other public comment? Okay. Where are we? Fiscal year budget status. So are we going to, do we have any more discussion on this?
Discussion is up to your board. The staff is seeking approval of recommendation B.
Right, so we have a motion.
I so move as written.
Is there any
second?
Okay, we have a motion and a second for item 9B.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Apollo?
Yes.
President Winston?
Yes. Okay.
So, Madam President, the timing ended up being pretty good, but maybe we could take a...
take a little break?
Yeah, take a little break just so that we know we have the PowerPoints.
We'll take a 10-minute break.
Okay.
And we'll get that set up. And we will go to item 9A.
Do you think so?
Which is the update on the low impact development component of the water resource reliability program and consideration of a recommendation to support a grant application for funding from Proposition 1.
Madam President and members of the board, I'm going to quickly introduce Darla Ellswick, who is a contractor with the Council for Watershed Health, and Seth Stevens with Cannon Associates, Cannon Corporation, Cannon Corp, who will be providing the presentation today on the update. I'm in support of recommendations for the district's, for your board support of a grant application for projects at Oceano Elementary School and on 19th Street between Beach and Paso Robles Streets. Those are two of the options that have been previously presented to your board. And before, I'm not sure who's taking the lead. Seth will be taking the lead. And the grant applications are due later in the year. Their work efforts will include the grant applications. And I just real quickly want to put a little bit of fiscal context to the work efforts. The initial work that was funded through Prop 84 was about $45,000 worth of work that Cannon did. And then that led to the technical assistance program that's funded by the State Water Board. And that dollar amount is about $240,000 for these work efforts. So combined, the state is going to be investing almost $300,000 in Oceano to pursue this. And in the staff report, you'll notice that the community's local match, if grants were obtained to implement the recommended projects, And there's still plenty of work to do. Would not even be as much as the state has already invested in these efforts. But with that, I'd like to introduce Seth Stevens. And did they provide you a clicker?
Good evening, President Austin, members of the board. My name is Seth Stevens. I'm an engineer with Canon, and I'm here to talk about the Prop 1 stormwater technical assistance tonight. So we have two objectives. First is just to review the stormwater concepts that we've come up with, the LID concepts. And then the second part is to figure out which of those components we want to put forward in the grant application. So first, just a little bit of background on the TA. Prop 1 is authorized funds for water projects, including stormwater throughout the state. The technical assistance is a program that's available to disadvantaged communities, of which Oceano qualifies, through the State Water Board. And that is administered through the Council for Watershed Health, who we are working through, Darla and Ken is working through. They provide assistance to the agencies and organizations to develop these grant applications. This work that we're doing now, the technical assistant, it builds upon the work that was done as part of the Prop 84 work that we presented, I think maybe in February, where we developed the LID concepts, and we built upon those. There are a few objectives with the Prop 1 grant. One is to reduce flooding. The second is to improve water quality, and in this case it would be in the Arroyo Grande Creek watershed, to recharge the groundwater and augment the groundwater basins, and then to provide some urban greening through, provide some urban greening through street trees and plantings and community aesthetics. And lastly, to support the regulatory compliance that's been coming through the Water Board. So there are two types of LID facilities that we've considered with these alternatives. The first is bioretention. These are engineered, landscaped areas that collect stormwater, filter it, treat it through soil media and plants, and then infiltrate it into to the ground. The second type of facility is a underground infiltrator. These are typically pipe systems or arch chambers as shown here. Water is piped typically to these. It's temporarily stored and then infiltrated into the ground, providing similar benefits as the bioretention, but without the greening component. The advantage to these is that you can, you know, do something over the top of them, reuse the surface for other uses. And lastly, trees. Simple as that sounds, they are an important component for stormwater uptake and provide greening benefits and multiple ecological benefits to the community. So for the project alternatives, these should look familiar to you guys. We've got four here. The first is along Warner Street, connecting from, I think, 13th to 17th into the school. The second is on 19th Street, south of the school. The third is a street project on Beach Street. And the last is a project at Oceano Elementary. So since we've presented these on with the Prop 84 stuff, we've gone out and done topographic survey of all the sites, done some utility research on the existing utilities around and property information, and have used that information to further develop the designs for these and develop cost estimates. So the Warner Street concept is shown here. This concept would provide a bioretention facility along the south portion of the street, shown in blue on this slide. It's kind of hard to see. Yeah, it's better. This concept would provide curb and gutter to collect and convey the stormwater from upstream to the bioretention facilities. It would have one-way traffic, vehicular traffic, which would be combined with a Shero for bike traffic in that direction as well, and then a dedicated bike lane in the westbound direction. It would also provide sidewalk for pedestrian connection to the elementary school. There would be no on-street parking with this concept, which for Warner Street actually works out okay. Most of the residences front the northbound, north and south facing streets, and so there are only a few houses that front Warner Street in this location, and not a ton of on-street parking currently. The second concept is very similar. This is on 19th, with north facing right on the screen. So the elementary school is just off the screen. This concept also has bioretention. It would be along the east side of the street. This street would have parking, on-street parking, to serve some of the businesses along that street, including the Boys and Girls Club, and there's a church. But it would have one-way traffic as well, and then a dedicated bike lane. There's some additional utility relocation with this concept that is not included with the Warner Street. There's a water line that would need to be relocated. The third street concept is along Beach Street. This concept would have bioretention facilities along the north side of the street. It would preserve the on-street parking on both sides of the road and two-way traffic, given the high density of residences that front this street. There would be bioretention along the north side that's a little different design. This is a than the others that had side sloped. This would be a planter box with vertical walls along the edges, but also provide sidewalk for pedestrian on both sides of the street. This concept would require some property acquisition in the form of easements from the homeowners on the south side of the street to provide ADA access around the back of the driveways. There's just not room within the right-of-way to fit all these improvements. And the fourth concept is different. This is at the elementary school, and this involves some of those underground infiltration chambers. Water would be diverted out of the street and into these underground facilities where it would be stored and infiltrated into the ground and then covered back up, and the play field that is currently there would be restored. We've had one discussion with the school district about this concept. They're open to it, but if we decide to move forward with it, we would need to further those discussions and talk details about the easement that would be required from them to install the facility. For each of these concepts, we've quantified the benefits with respect to stormwater management, infiltration, and also pollutant removal. Those are shown in this table under the performance section, the blue section near the bottom, as well as develop preliminary cost estimates for the facilities. As Pavo mentioned, the match for Oceano being a disadvantaged community would be 5% of the total cost, which is pretty outstanding. So we've quantified that as well. Each of the street alternatives perform pretty similarly with respect to stormwater management. You get similar volumes managed and similar pollutant removals proportional to the amount of money that you spend. The Oceano Elementary School piece, the underground facilities, is a really high performer, low cost relatively compared to the others because of the sheer volume of stormwater that we can fit in these chambers. We have all the room that we need to maximize the storage there. What we're recommending is a combination of the Oceano Elementary School piece along with the 19th Street component, because we feel like individually they won't rank as strongly as combined with respect to the grant award. Although the elementary school provides a ton of storage, it doesn't have any of the other benefits that are looked at from the water board, you know, some of the community greening and pedestrian improvements and things like that. So by coupling 19th Street and the elementary school, we feel like that would be a pretty strong proposal. And that's what's shown on the column on the right there. So moving forward from here, I mean, we'll talk about how you guys would like to proceed, and this is the last slide, but there will be some additional community outreach as part of the TA assistance, and we will continue to support this application until it's submitted. We're expecting the awards to be announced in the first quarter next year, and the contracts to come out the fourth quarter of next year. So with that, we can start any discussion, questions that you guys may have.
Yeah. What is the lifetime of the facility, like the one at the elementary school? What would be the lifetime of that in the ground? 20 years, 30 years?
Yeah, I would say at least that. These are made out of high-density polyethylene. This is a standard pipe material that's installed all over the place in public instances, and I don't know exactly what the manufacturer's warranty is, but I would suspect somewhere around 50 years.
So it's kind of like a big leaching field in a way.
It's exactly a leaching field for stormwater. Yeah.
And they have a long life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. There's some maintenance involved with them, you know, but if they're well maintained, they should function and last for a long time.
So they really are a good investment if you look at the cost and the potential to save water.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and reduce flooding at the same time.
Right. Yeah, I forgot to mention, each of these concepts are upstream of the current flooding locations you guys have on Highway 1 and should help alleviate some of that, at least for the smaller storms.
For Beach Street, is there a reason why you didn't look at a bike lane there? I think that's a fairly common route to get across Highway 1 to the park and the beach.
Beach Street is really constrained with the amount of properties that front that street and driveways and, you know, on-street parking that currently exist. If we were to include a bike lane, we could do Sharrows would be one option. You know, the shared bike car lane. If you want to dedicate bike lanes, something would have to give in the form of parking or a traffic lane. There's just not enough real estate.
Yeah, what about making it one way like the other proposals?
That could be a possibility. It just seemed like in this area, given the amount of people that live there, that would raise some concerns, but we're open to whatever you guys want.
It wasn't entirely clear to me why there was a preference for 19th Street over the other streets. Can you explain the reasoning
19th,
a little more?
One of the benefits of 19th is it provides a nice connection to the school, but also in between the school and the Boys and Girls Club. So that was the logic with that one, and it's continuous with the elementary school project. It's also the cheapest of the street projects, and so the match would be, you know, less. So.
Two for the price of one.
Yeah.
So, did you have anything yet?
I was just going to ask something similar to that. So, the cost would be, why is it less than, say, Warner Street that connects to the school there?
I think.
Why is it so much less on 19th? I'm just curious.
I think it's a smaller reach. It's hard to tell here. I think it's a little less street, you know, length to be constructed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the length of the project would be shorter as well.
Yeah.
So you're saying this can be done as, like, each one is a project you can put, so we're not necessarily going to be able to do them all?
No. Okay. What we're recommending is coupling
19th and Oceana
as
those two.
As one project in the grant application.
Oh, so two, we could pick two of the four? Is that what
sure,
it,
yeah.
Is that how it's
so the thought of, so we, as Seth was mentioning, the three street projects are different in nature than the project at Oceano Elementary School. In Ocean Elementary School, that project is really the higher performer and the more cost-effective project, so that really needs to be in the grant application. And then it's a question of, well, which other project best couples with Oceano Elementary? And, you know, some of the thoughts is that 19th Street is the lesser expensive one. The other thought is that 19th Street itself leads to Oceano Elementary School. We'd be able to do some enhancements that helps with safe routes to schools. It along the pathway where there's Boys and Girls Club as well as there's a church on the corner there. And so it just seems to be that one that when you balanced cost as well as some of the aesthetics and the routing and everything jumped out at us. Certainly doing something along Beach Street would be really wonderful. But the constraints are bigger, and it's more of a thoroughfare in a way, and so the expectation of being able to maintain two-way traffic, and then the number of homes that are fronting it, we're envisioning that would be, you know, a bigger project and have more constraints and probably more challenging.
Well, I like the high retention of the water at the school.
Pardon me?
The high retention of the water.
At Oceano Elementary.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so Oceano Elementary seems like it needs to be in there. And then what of the street projects would be good to couple with it?
I'd say the easiest, the one that would work would be 19th.
Go ahead.
Question.
Okay. I see that some of this is north and south and some of it's east and west. Is there any, because I'm thinking that like Beach Street, you're coming down the hill and trapping it all along there. Mm-hmm. Is there any difference in benefit from like the one going straight down and the two going across? Wouldn't you get more water from the ones coming across?
Yeah, the general flow direction is to the southwest, and so like Warner and Beach Street being oriented the way they are, they do collect a lot of water. 19th though actually collects quite a bit too, because water is flowing from the east into that street.
Okay.
And so we would peel it off when it
conduit.
Yeah.
To the curve down.
Mm-hmm.
When you say grading on private property, like required,
yeah. So
does that mean, like, where people's yards come out, you're going to have to cut into that to get the sidewalks in.
The facilities would be within the public.
In addition to the right of way, and it's already there.
Yeah, the facilities would be within the public right of way. It's just when you're trying to retrofit an existing street, especially these streets that are a lot of them, like Warner, is dead flat. You need to add some slope to it to get water to grade. And so by the time you get to the property line, you may have a disconnect. You might be higher than the existing property or a little lower. And so my point there was this, we would have to probably do some grading on the private properties to match in.
And they'd all get sidewalk.
Yeah.
Curb and gutter, that's.
So am I correct in assuming that we pick a couple today, that doesn't mean that down the road we could pick a couple other ones? and apply for grants to...
Well, all good things happen, yes, and we do these first.
This could just be like a start, and down the road we could do other streets, possibly.
You, The possibility exists. It's all really dependent on the amount of state funding and grant funding, because these projects are really dependent on the grant funding. But I think that when you establish projects like this and they're successful, they can help to, you know, develop more community support. And again, it's just going to be a matter of the availability of future grant revenues.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Do we just, is this, we want to support the grant application?
Yes, that's certainly, you know, my last thought is that, you know, again, when we look at project cost of 19th Street versus Beach, there's about a $1.6 million difference. And these are going to be really competitive grants. It's not the funding that's allocated, you know, at the regional level at the by the county. It's competitive on a statewide basis. And so coming in with a good application with, you know, some reasonable costs, you know, those are the types of things that we're really balancing in trying to seek the grant funding and everything. So.
Well, I think it really 19th goes really good with the schools for all the reasons you said. I think it's a good.
Additional work would be required with the school. You know, we have to work with the County of San Luis Obispo since they have the roads jurisdiction, and working with the affected property owners as well. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but to get the preliminary support of your board at this time would be good.
Has there been any discussion with the property owners on 19th Street? To see what they think about this?
Not yet, yeah.
Yeah, they'll have to.
I mean, because that could be a factor. I mean, if a lot of the people on 19th Street don't want this, but people on Beach Street do, or something like that, it might be.
Everyone's going to. Curbs and gutters.
Yeah, but the dropping down to only parking on one side of the street and. In one way, so I don't know.
The one-way street might be something that.
So on 19th Street, I don't believe most of the houses are fronting on the east-west streets, right?
Yeah, 19th has residences on the west side.
Off the west side.
The east side is mostly businesses.
Yeah. So I guess in terms of the impacts to. Parking and front footage of properties, the least impact would be Warner, the second would be 19th Street, and then the greatest impact would be along Beach Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although Warner doesn't include any parking at all, and 19th it has one side of parking. Yeah. So.
My concern is that we don't want to go too far down the road before we make sure that the people who live on the street are on board with the plan?
Okay. Yeah, we haven't discussed the exact timing of when we're going to reach out to the property owners, but we'll do that, figure out what that scheduling is going to be.
If there's any more questions, I'll go ahead and open public comment now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any public comment on this item?
Do I have to keep saying my name? Giselle Naylor, Oceano homeowner. I live in the area of the four streets that you're considering improving the drainage for water, stormwater on Warner, 19th Beach, and Oceano Elementary. My suggestion is that Cannon Associates and Mr. Seth Stevens, the engineer with Cannon, actually stand on these streets during a rain so they can see where the water actually goes. So I've actually stood on the streets to see where the storm water goes. So taking Oceano Elementary School, I think, and 19th, that's where you have the most public buildings, the government buildings. You've got the community center, the elementary school, but the flooding occurs on the other side of the elementary school from 19th. So 19th is, the bus goes down 19th, so there's an argument in favor of improving 19th Street so there's more public ingress and egress, especially if Diablo Canyon blows. You know, there are only so many roads. I think they're residential roads, collector roads, which is the smaller streets like Warner, where if there's really a disaster, there are only a few streets in Oceano where you can get to high ground to avoid, you know, flooding or, you know, if there's a nuclear power plant meltdown. But the flooding occurs for some reason. The water comes out underneath Oceano Elementary School. It goes down Warner Street, headed towards this building, and it floods the houses on the lower, the corners of like 15th and 13th, but mostly you can see the flooding around 15th and Warner. So you need to figure out, why is that happening with the existing storage facilities, if there are any, underneath the elementary school? Also, somebody raised an issue, what types of materials are you gonna put in and how long is it gonna last? I wanna see that list. You know, that goes a lot towards how much things are gonna cost. To me, 5 cents on a dollar, that's like a drop in the bucket for how much things are gonna cost. Karen White talked about Beach Street running downhill towards the ocean. The water, when it rains, is gonna go downhill. So where does that end up? It's gonna end up at the sewer treatment plant, which you've had one line break, according to Tony, during the heavy rains, and we've had major flooding down there. That there might be an argument for improving, you know, putting in whatever types of bio upgrade you can, trees, whatever, that sucks that up. Plus, there's toxic runoff from the ag land, and they are not required to control that toxic runoff. So these are all factors that should come into consideration. And 3 minutes is not enough to really talk about this. My caution to Canon is they're not even going to be able to get records of what they've done in terms of grading from the DPW and the County Planning Department. I have personal knowledge of when there's been storms, the county sending out somebody that digs a trench across private property, like an open lot. Private properties don't know about it. They divert the rainwater. The rainwater runs down 15th Street and floods homeowners' driveways. And the only way I knew that is one of the homeowners said, oh yeah, that happened for months with us until my father-in-law, who is an engineer, went into the county and made a public record because he was able to do the laser, you know, shooting the laser grades and make a record of what was actually happening. I mean, there's a lot of information, and that's why public records are so important in the county, the planning department, whether it's by design or not, in this year and time. They don't even have all the records of their work in computer. It's literally piled in stacks of paper in people's offices. And that, you know, that's not good enough to keep track when Canon is planning what they're going to do to improve flooding in this area and what the cost effectiveness is.
Thank you. Okay, is there any other public comment on this item? Case?
I just had one question for the board. If anyone has property near any of the streets we're talking about?
I do.
I don't.
Yeah, when there's a lot of rain, those huge puddles there on Warner 15.
Let's see.
Are you within a... But it's nothing that's like anything like this. That
do we have a conflict?
Director Plogle, I think, is asking in case to make sure if anyone has a conflict related that their house is... with in the...
My guardian of my properties isn't here to tell you.
Is that where you were going with this,
yes.
Director Plogle?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't. I mean,
Villa, where...
16th Street.
Director Villa,
mm-hmm.
You're on 16th?
No, I am.
I'm on 14th. And there, I do see, like, when it rains, when it storms, I do see puddles there. They're just like a little eyesore, and then they're gone after, I don't know, 4 or 5 days are gone. They get smaller and smaller. They're not a danger. They're not anything like the, you know.
I think the question, though, is whereabouts on 14th Street are you?
I'm on 14th and Warner.
So you're probably within five. Are you within?
Are you on the corner of Warner and 14th?
I'm on the end of 14th Street.
And well, what I'm doing right now is I pulled up, you know, a map off the internet real quick. And you're on the dead end of Warner, so you know, for all practical purposes, it seems like your property is definitely within 500 feet of the Warner project. And then
my street has no issues with flooding. I'm lucky, I guess. But yeah, I do see those puddles when I take, you know, go on walks.
No, but I mean, if you're within 500 feet of the,
I just go around them.
Is it the whole Warner Street?
It's part of living
Warner
in Oceana with no sidewalks and gutters.
Yeah. Right.
Well, we're not approving.
Hard
Warner.
To imagine.
We're approving. We're approving. 19.
So maybe you can.
Okay. So here's the question. So it's one thing to be within the 500-foot rule, as they say. At the other, even if you're in the 500-foot rule, the question is also, is it likely to have a material influence on your financial interests, in this case, the value of your house? So I have a really hard time believing that improvements to a street that you don't live on are going to have a material impact on the value of your property. So that would be the analysis I would be thinking of at this point.
Thank you.
Always a very good question to address. In response to public comment, I do want to mention that one of the questions was, you know, were the engineers out there when it was raining? And to what extent were they relying on county information? Mr. Stevens had mentioned that they did independent topographical. They've done independent engineering analysis. And yes, a number of the individuals from Canon did come out to Oceano when it was raining in order to do field observations and establish consistency with what the engineering analysis was.
Find out what I'm supposed to make a motion on. I make a motion in support of preparing a grant application for projects at Oceano Elementary School and on 19th Street between Beach and Paso Robles Streets.
Second.
Okay, can we get a...
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Plogle?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay. And that will take us now to 9C.
It'll just take me a moment to pull up my PowerPoint.
Mosquitoes is what it
Thanks,
is.
Thanks, Darla. Thanks, Seth.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And in a roundabout way, this is our last business item for the day. Carrie, is there any way you can maybe just turn the screen a little bit back our way to...
Can you see it, Cynthia?
Well, then I create other challenges, don't I?
Parallax is hell.
There you go.
Easy enough. So item number 9C today is the sort of the continuation of the discussion items that we've been having regarding Five Cities Fire Authority, the strategic plan, and modifications to the Joint Powers of Authority Agreement with the cities of Aurora Grande and Grover Beach, and efforts that are leading up to board's consideration of calling for a special tax election in the March 2020 primary election. I'm still struggling to get to my point here, just to be a second. And in the staff report itself, I provided references and links to a number of the documents that have been created. The county did a study on fire services in the unincorporated areas. They've recently adopted some new policies regarding if a district such as Oceano were to divest. We obviously have the strategic plan out there. But tonight's discussion is really to start the dialogue about what are the community options. And so I don't have a presentation that is a conclusive type of a presentation on what should the public information be that's provided to the community. And instead, what I was hoping for here is to encourage dialogue with your board. And so as we go through it, I think that, or I anticipate that the board may want to see some follow-up on various items, and I think that would all be appropriate. Again, here we're around the middle of July. The deadline for calling for the tax election is late October. So we have, around 3 months in order to really be able to pull together the public information. And certainly staff is prepared to follow up on any of the board directions that might come out of tonight's meeting. So again, this is going to be our initiation of discussions on community options. And overall, three sort of components to the presentation. One is just on the various issues of community-based decision-making. How does a community like Oceano go through decisions about what will the future of fire and emergency services be? What are those options? And then what are the next steps in developing public information and guidance from your board? So with respect to community-based decision-making, and I know that I've spoken to this a little bit before, but when we are working on issues like this, there's a certain amount of redundancy or recapping prior discussions that's important, and part of it is it's a reinforcement of what is it that the district is doing, and part of it is, sort of practice for the time when the community discussions become more involved. Here, again, we're probably 9 months before Election Day, and it's pretty common for individuals to really get focused on what's happening in just the weeks and the, couple months before election. And so by getting out in front of it and having discussions, it preps all of us really for the community discussions. But in terms of community-based decision-making, it's important to recognize that, there are voter rights. That's very much a part of California. And then there's the responsibilities of your elected officials. And I characterize that, and I've characterized this these types of elections and efforts the same consistency for many, many years, because voter rights are really associated with individual rights and people's rights. And what are the people in terms of this kind of decision? And we in government, it's our responsibilities. And ultimately, as the board of directors of a local agency, it's responsibilities associated with elected officials. But together, it's the voters, the property owners, and the elected officials who just share in deciding the future of California communities. And it's the voters and your board who's going to be deciding what's the future of fire and emergency services in Oceano. One of the reasons I think that's I like to emphasize that is because too often we get into discussions, or there's discussions with communities where it's almost like the public is pitted against the government. And I think that the approach really has to be, how is it that the public and the local agency and your board are working together to try to determine what future decisions are going to be? And there's no implication that the best future decision is approval of the special tax. Working with the public is really respecting whatever the decisions voters end up making at the end of the day. So in terms of, you know, the rights of voters, the Proposition 218 was called the Right to Vote on Taxes Act. Proposition 13 was before that. And again, I know we've talked about this before, but it's important to continue to reemphasize some of these points as we're going through these efforts, and even though the election is still 8-9 months away. But California has a history. The California propositions have a history of really on tax reform, and it's very clear that in order to have additional funding for fire and emergency services, that funding must be approved by either voters or landowners. Voters decide whether to fund additional taxes imposed on parcels, and if it's proposed by your board, it requires a two-thirds voter approval. In some situations, initiatives of individuals and voters can reduce that two-thirds requirement to a 50%, but certainly in March, the threshold or the bar is going to be a two-thirds voter approval. In contrast, property owners decide on whether to approve assessments, and as a little bit of a past history, when an assessment was approved or was pursued in prior years around 2013 or so, and it included Rio Grande, Grover, and Oceano, that assessment approach did not pass. So then turning then to the responsibilities of the elected officials, and it's really your board that then decides how is taxpayer money spent, whether it's the current tax allocations received by the district or whether there's new funding that's approved by voters. But as elected officials, your job is to best allocate the available funding to programs, projects, and in this particular situation, you know, really vital public services. And we know, as discussed previously, that in order for the district to continue to receive services from Five Cities Fire Authority, the Oceano voters will need to approve a parcel tax in March of 2020. Celia has been doing a lot of work on the parcel evaluations. I attended a recent conference session about parcel taxes and from a prominent attorney in California. So we're doing all of our homework right now on how to be able to structure this parcel tax and make some of those specific recommendations to your board in the very near future. If a parcel tax is not approved, then your board will need to decide on which options to pursue for fire and emergency services. What are the other options? And the discussion is important, I believe, because for a well-informed public to be able to make good decisions at the ballot box, they need to understand what their options are. The challenges we'll talk about a little bit is that there's still uncertainty associated with some of those options. And in providing public information, how do we provide good public information when uncertainty exists? But again, the theme is, how does your board support voter rights? What does that entail? Compiling and providing existing information, what the options are, and getting a little bit of technical challenges. So what are the options if the funding is approved for Five Cities Fire Authority? And also, if the special tax is approved, it's not just about the Five Cities Fire Authority, but it also provides Oceano itself with the enhanced ability to operate an independent fire department if the need arises in the future. So certainly the special tax is being focused in on Five Cities Fire Authority. The other benefit, and it's more than an incidental benefit, is it will provide greater assurances that under any option, the community will have better ability to fund future fire and emergency services. I'm being careful in my words, one of the things I was coached on is don't say when it passes, say if it passes. If it passes, it means Oceana will be less reliant on other agencies as well in the future. What options exist if funding is not approved by voters? And essentially, there's two. We've previously covered divestiture of fire and emergency services. It's a pretty rigorous process that has to go through the Local Agency Formation Commission, and it's still subject to both the approval of the County of San Luis Obispo and, of course, the future services would be determined by the County of San Luis Obispo. The other option is reestablishing an independent fire department relying on volunteers and or reserve firefighters. And we've done some real rough approximations of funding options and what kind of staffing we might be looking at if Oceana were to reestablish an independent fire protection district or fire department.
Wasn't there another option of contracting with CAL FIRE? I thought we talked about that before.
Oh, so not for us to directly contract with CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE really won't directly contract with us.
That would be through the county?
So it's similar with Los Osos. Is Los Osos contracts through the, it gets CAL FIRE services through the county's contract. Part of that is for CAL FIRE to consider a new contracting entity, the process that they have to go through is much more extensive. And our obligations to directly contract with CAL FIRE would be greater. By contracting through the county has a better ability to determine the level of services and the funding levels with CAL FIRE.
But is that a third option, or would that only be if we divest and the county takes over?
So through the county is really our only option because there's practical constraints, but I want to make sure to take a couple notes because your questions, Director Roplogel, are the same types of questions that we can anticipate the public. Why not directly contract with CAL FIRE?
The basic issue is that they don't want to do it, do they? I mean, they won't do it, will they?
Yeah, Chief Jalbert with CAL FIRE was basically telling us that it's just not going to be feasible for us to directly contract with them. Pismo Beach does, but that means that Pismo Beach has the wherewithal to meet all of those direct contractual obligations with CAL FIRE. Versus divestiture and the county working through it, the county provides the buffer, and then ultimately the county provides in a situation where we would divest, the county takes the risks of the greater costs that might occur. I should back up a little bit. If the special tax is approved, and obviously the plan and the working with Rio Grande and Grover is the direction that everybody's been heading in under the new terms of the JPA. But with additional funding, the feasibility of operating an independent fire department would go up. If something wasn't going to happen with let's say that Arroyo Grande and Grover wanted to take additional efforts in the future and Oceano couldn't afford them. Well, our ability to operate an independent fire department with the special taxes would be improved, and it could be feasible at that point in time that we might be able to do something directly with CAL FIRE. I still think it's unlikely, though, as a small unincorporated community, CAL FIRE would want to entertain that. I think it's most likely they would want to see us operate through the county as Los Osos is doing and as Cayucas is doing now as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, but, you know, again, I think that's one of the benefits of these discussions, because being able to make sure that we have, you know, a clear and concise answer on that question when it's posed from members of the public is important. And I really encourage all board members to just ask questions as we're moving through this. No need to, you know, wait for them for some, you know, future slide. So, so what kind of information might be good to compile for the public if voters do not approve it? Because I think that the information associated with Five Cities Fire, the development of the strategic plan, the moving from volunteer and reserve firefighters to full-time firefighters, you know, the overall transition from, you know, the old reserve and volunteer firefighter to urban firefighting teams and the emergency medical responses is relatively well known. Again, we need to be able to articulate that all to voters, and certainly Chief Lieberman and representatives of the Five Cities Fire Authority are going to be helped. But the challenge that I see is, how do we articulate what the options are if the special tax doesn't pass? One of the risks is we don't want the community to sort of have a naive impression that the county will just take care of it all.
That right there is the main.
You know, certainly if in the minds of some voters, it's simply going to come down to cost. And that needs to be respected as well. But in terms of service levels, because if you vote no, you know it's going to cost you less. The uncertainty is, what's the lesser level of service that you're going to then get? Part of that discussion in general has been Five Cities Fire Authority is focused on providing fire and emergency services specifically to Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano. Through a divestiture in the county, the county's mission, and Chief Jalbert expressed this on many occasions, their mission is countywide. So if that means that there's emergencies going on and they have to move staff or engines from the Oceano station to help with other areas, then that's the county fire, county and Cal Fire's mission is countywide services. So there's a difference in priorities there. Sometimes it's hard, though, to understand how would this different mission actually affect response times to me if I'm having a medical emergency. Because if
that's the questions we need to put in.
And I would,
the topics is response times, and
I would quote Chief Jalbert again in saying, if it was a Cal Fire station here and the station was empty and you called, he would send a truck. That's what he said. I would send a fire truck, but I couldn't guarantee how long it would take to get there or where it would come from. And he said that directly in explaining that if the truck that was stationed at Oceano is at Avila Beach, a truck might have to come from Napomo. It might have to come from the San Luis Airport. And that whole issue of response time, when we know that that at the Five Cities Fire Authority, we know the trucks are within the radius of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano. So they're always 4, 5, 6, 7. But, I mean, that was his direct quote that I'm quoting. And so I think that's a real issue. It is to me, certainly.
And so what my thought is that I know that we've had some individual discussions with Chief Jalbert, and maybe the idea is we need to pose some questions to him. And that way we get responses from him, and we can then share those direct responses with the community. Because it's a little bit more difficult when we say, well, we had a discussion with Chief Jalbert, and this is what he said. We really want to be able to articulate, you know, ask him some specific questions so that... And, you know, obviously tonight isn't going to be the time to do brainstorming on what questions do we want to pose to Chief Jalbert.
Well, I think the main thing so far is we just got to stress the alternatives and what they are exactly, what would happen. Well, like you said, if this is a county station versus,
yeah. Along with response time, I would ask, recognizing that they have paramedics on board and medical is the primary calls from our fire service are medical. That's the first, most calls. But are they as well equipped to handle structure fires in that their main fire responsibility is the rural area and is wildland fires? Because they're far more better equipped for wildland fires than, say, the Five Cities Fire Authority. Because it's rare. I mean, the Five Cities Fire Authority has to go outside on a mutual call, generally, to have a grass fire of any substance.
So response times, and part of my thinking is it's not just the first response, it's the second response.
The ambulance, too, is another thing that I think needs to be brought out that we don't have a lot of ambulance.
So, but it seems to me that the level of services from the ambulances, would their response times is going to be similar, whether it's Five Cities Fire Authority or county or Cal Fire or independent, because certainly there's constraints on the ambulance side, and there's only a certain number of throughout the county. There's only a few, but there's like
two here.
Yeah. So what information might be compiled for district options if the voters do not approach, and for divestiture of services with the, what information do we really have? Because the county has recently adopted some policies that says, look, if they're going to take over fire and emergency services, then they are going to determine the level of services that are provided. David Church with LAFCO, when he was at a prior board meeting to talk about divestiture of services, he identified that in the statute, your board, the district, is responsible for developing a plan of services in order to submit an application to LAFCO. But now the county is saying they're going to determine the plan of services. So, your board's determination for plans of services in order to do your LAFCO application in the event that a divestiture came up really is just an initiation of discussions because the county is ultimately going to make the decision if they decide to accept the services on the level of services.
And we lose all local control.
Yes.
That is a term that should be in their local control.
We would lose the ability to, and not only local control, but there's another issue among the firefighters themselves in that Cal Fire moves their firefighters around, and many, many, many of the Five Cities Fire Authority firefighters are residents of the communities in which they live.
I don't know if that's,
I mean,
that's
in which they serve.
A big point that the Five Cities Fire Authority are local people, whereas if you Cal Fire, they're moved around. There could be some a firefighter in here in Oceano that lives, in the Bay Area, and he's never been here before.
But
he might be assigned here for a week or two, and then when he gets a call, it wouldn't be like the guys that know right where that it's at.
Well, that's maybe not a legitimate argument in that the new dispatch center with GPS, and they send the closest fire truck to the closest fire truck to the incident goes. It doesn't matter. It could be a Cal. It actually technically, if there was a fire down the street and a Cal Fire truck was driving by, they might be the first one called, because of the GPS system for the whole county that's run by Cal Fire for Five Cities Fire Authority.
So I'm hearing two thoughts, if I'm hearing correctly. One is simply the continuity of staff. And I do know that when Los Osos moved from its own operations underneath the county and the county fire's wings, the fire chief that had been employed by Los Osos CSD was moved out of the area. partly probably because in that consolidation, they didn't need another fire chief. And so they relocated the prior Los Osos CSD fire chief to some other area. I'm not aware of other staff, but certainly I do know other individuals who have worked locally for CAL FIRE who have been moved to different regions of the state. The second thing I'm hearing is really the focus on local training and local training that's been provided by Five Cities Fire Authority. And some of that gets into just the intimacy of the streets and the alleyways that the individuals at Five Cities Fire Authority have learned. So what is the information under a divestiture or under reestablishing an independent fire district? And for the divestiture, as we're talking about right now, it's simply the county will make the future decisions. I don't have the statement in here that there will be a loss of local control, but I hear that loud and clear. And part of the problem here is of what's perplexing is, you know, what type of information can be provided when there is significant uncertainty on what the county might decide in the future. I think it, you know, is it just fair to state that in some respects it's going to be speculative?
Well, that's a question. Is it, people think, well, let the county take over, it would be cheaper, but will it be? Would it be cheaper? Because are we at the mercy of the county raising rates in the future? Do we know that? Or?
Well, we know that the county cannot raise taxes on Oceano without voter approval in Oceano. I suppose, and it just seems pretty unlikely, the county could propose a tax that's much broader than Oceano. Let's say they were to propose a countywide tax. Mm-hmm. I think the likelihood of it passing would be extremely low, part because it's not going to be a community-specific type of proposal. But in theory, they could propose a tax over a broader area than just Oceano, and Oceano could get outvoted. Again, that's speculation, just like we don't know what the Board of Supervisors would ultimately do. And I wouldn't tend to put that speculation on the table. The basic idea is that the county doesn't have any taxing authority that would allow them to impose taxes on people in Oceano. Oceano voters would have to vote. And that's, you know, the rules that the county has to follow are the same rules that Oceano CSD has to follow.
The divestiture, do we need to put in there, is that going to cost OCSD to file with LAF code? Is that a big cost?
Yes, there will be costs.
So that should be something that's in there, that the cost to the district.
You know, I think in the long term, those types of costs aren't...
not that big.
Yeah, they're not significant.
Question. Where would, if the tax were not to pass, where would, if, and it was put to CAL FIRE, where would that extra money come from? From the county coffers by way of other funds from us, or how?
They would have to look at all of the general fund money that they have.
But would they take things like our buildings or?
So that's where some of the uncertainty exists, right? Is that if OCSD were to consider divestiture, the county's policy says, you know, they're going to look at all revenue and asset options. And so would the likelihood that they would expect to have the fire station go up? And I think that there's a reasonable likelihood that they would say they're going to want to have, you know, most of the property tax money, and that they would expect to have the fire station as well. In terms of administrative offices, then, we could very well get kicked out. And we got to find new rent. And then that new rent is going to be passed on to water and wastewater customers. And those costs are going to be incurred by the community. So there's a little bit of trade-off, right? Because if the special tax doesn't pass and the board has to seek divestiture, it could cost money to the water and sewer customers. And somewhat of being money in one pocket versus money in another pocket. So...
What about the sheriff's office? Does that belong? Would that came out of the fire fund too? I mean, the water fire fund too, didn't it?
So first off, I think my note here is cost to estimates for relocating staff if county took ownership of fire station. The second question is, would the county expect also the ownership of the sheriff's substation? Why is that a question out there? Right now, they pay us about $113,000 a year for the rent of that substation. If they said during a plan for divestiture, they would also expect the transfer from the district to the county for the sheriff's substation, because then that will save them $113,000 a year, and then that's $113,000 that they could have to help, you know, provide fire and emergency services in Oceano. Then that's another asset that would come off. And so the divestiture, you know, I think is likely would not, you know, be free of community costs.
I have a question. You keep on saying that they can take this and that. I'm sure that they can, but is it normal process for them to do that when this happens?
So we're in uncharted waters, because the divestiture, or when a special district says we can no longer provide this service, it just doesn't happen very often. So what types of precedent is out there for that? And they just don't exist. I guess my thought is, as we're discussing this, these are the types of questions that we can send a letter to the county. Supervisors Pashong and Gibson are the ad hoc committee to try to address this situation for the Board of Supervisors. And we can just send them a letter and say, would the county do this? And I'm not sure how they're going to answer it, but I think it's a fair question to ask.
I think you should do that, because they were on that county study. And one of the things the county study says is that there should be a fire service in Oceano as part of the triangular services for the whole area, even if it was a county station. I mean, they've acknowledged that the study acknowledged that there should be a station in Oceano, right?
I think what they acknowledged in their study is that if they became responsible for services in Oceano, they would need to operate out of this station.
Yeah, well, I almost got it right.
Yeah. So, legal counsel, is sort of clarifying some of my statements, is that the county couldn't take the position of just taking our assets. It would be part of a negotiation effort. The key is, who's got the leverage in negotiation? You know, who's the big bear and who's the little bear?
Who needs the fire servants and who's got it?
Yeah. And when we look at their numbers, and they'd have about $500,000 gap or so to cover every year, I wouldn't be surprised if their position would be that, look, their position in negotiation's not unreasonable. Okay, so note here is letter to county. And I think that in this type of correspondence, you know, I'm glad to prepare it. I think it really has to come under the signature of President Austin. You know, it can be sent directly to the chairman of the Board of Supervisors with CCs to Supervisors Pashong, all the supervisors, but expecting responses more from County Administrative Officer Wade Horton and Supervisors Pashong and Gibson. And I think it's fair questions, too, because, again, how do we portray what is known? What are we able to tell Oceano voters about what this divestiture and what the county might do? And we can speak and we can point voters to the county study and recent county policies, but that's also kind of creating the expectation that voters are going to want to read through all of that stuff before they vote.
Like a bullet point thing.
Yeah, that's not, yeah.
Because you say go read a study and they won't.
Oh, and lastly, you know, again, this is kind of a point drowning into details here, that divestiture is a statutory-driven process through LAFCO. So not only is it going to have challenges associated with how would the negotiations occur with the county, what type of existing assets of the district in Oceano would be at risk, but also a very bureaucratic type of process through LAFCO. So without a divestiture, what would be the other? What information is available to provide the community on what reestablishing an independent fire department would look like? And we see fire professionals who are here, and they just shake their head.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's not going to work. You can't do it.
That's why we're not doing them anymore.
But I don't think it's fair to tell voters that it's not going to work. Right, because if that's where the district is at the end of the day, then the district has this, you know, ethical responsibility to the community to make it work. The county reminds us that providing fire and emergency services isn't a statutory requirement. By law, you don't have to do it. You don't even have to seek divestiture. You could just say we can't fund it anymore, or like Templeton has done. Templeton gets, you know, for order of magnitude, roughly the same amount of property tax revenues that Oceano gets. But they allocate a pretty good chunk of money to parks and recreation and not as much money to fire and emergency services as Oceano does. And what Templeton does is they don't operate a station 24/7, 365. How would Oceano, and so we see fire officials who say it's not going to work, and yet we see other agencies doing it. The effect is lower levels of services. What might be the scenario? What might be the range in scenarios? Again, that's a hard one, because to tell voters this is exactly what would happen is difficult, because exactly what would happen would be based on what the board would decide in the future. Your board right now can't commit to what a future board might decide in terms of implementation of services.
Question. Tax base wise and other ways you can compare Templeton and Oceano, but I'm thinking of hazards in Oceano as compared to Templeton. And I'm thinking of even, is the acreage the same? Is the space the same? The tax may be the same, but is the population the same? I know we have some real special hazards in Oceano.
Yeah,
one of them is
Templeton,
maybe. Do they have the train in Templeton?
Mm-mm. No, train station?
No, the train itself.
Yes, they do. Because it goes between, you know, the community that we know of is Templeton, and I think it's right there by right off the river.
Part of their responsibility?
You mean responding to an accident would happen?
Does their fire district include the trains? Train?
Yeah, I'm not positive. Because I know that there's also a County Cal Fire station in Templeton.
I mean, I'm just looking at the hazards that Oceano has.
Yeah, I think that
an airport, a train, an ice plant, a sewer plant, we can go on and on.
So I'm leading in here to asking your board this kind of question is, do you think it's appropriate to do some comparisons to the other agencies, and how do we do that? And so I think part of it is why is Templeton able to get by with a fire department that's not operating 24/7? And it's because County Cal Fire is right around the corner. right? So they have this, it's a little bit different from where you're going, Vice President White, where you're saying, what are the risks in Templeton versus the risks in Oceano, which is valid, but then also, what else is in there that mitigates the risks? And in Templeton, big thing that mitigates their risks is that there is a County Cal Fire station in very close proximity.
To do that because
what about the ambulance? Do they have an ambulance
in
Templeton?
Know.
Because there is a nexus between ambulance service and fire service. Otherwise, Five Cities Fire Authority goes to every call an ambulance goes to.
So let's move from Templeton then and move to Cambria, because I'm not sure about ambulance services in Templeton so much. Cambria doesn't have, you know, three full-time. They had safer grants that went away. They've got a bigger fire department budget. They've got good staffing. Still, they sought to get voter approval for a parcel tax last year in order to get that full the third time shift permanent in there.
Yeah.
And the Cambria voters did not approve it. But Cambria has a situation where they have their health care district and their own, you know, they have a special district that has its own ambulance services. So Cambria is kind of unique that there's two districts there, one with fire and emergency responses, one with ambulance services. The district for with ambulance services is much larger, right? It covers a bigger territory. But the ability for the two Cambria agencies to coordinate fire protection and ambulance services is something that's unique for Cambria.
Yeah.
So we're getting sort of a little bit into the comparative analysis of other agencies. But what about reestablishing an independent fire department itself specifically? How much current funding exists? What will service levels compare to Five Cities Fire Authority? What other agencies operate with funding? So this is where we get into the question of, you know, comparisons. So what we know right now, and these are approximations, I didn't get into saying these are budget estimates because this is real big picture right now. But approximately about $950,000 a year available for fire department funding, and that comes after.
So you say we have 950 available.
Yeah. And so, what are the costs of staffing? We'd have to have our own fire chief, and I'm approximating 200 to 250,000. Now, of course, that includes benefits and personal equipment. That would include the fire chief's, you know, vehicle, his own or her own, you know, emergency response. Normally, that fire chief is going to take that home. If something happens in the middle of the night, often the fire chief is going to be responding. Three fire captains, one shift, about $400,000. Chief Lieberman was estimating that about $375,000, so I'm rounding it up to $400,000, figuring that it's also going to include some limited personal safety gear. And the fire engineers, about $125,000 each, again, including benefits and some limited personnel gear. And so when I take those numbers and I start with the current available funding of about 950, I subtract out the range for the fire chief, 200, 250, means net available is somewhere between 700 and 750. Minimum required is a shift of three fire captains. After we subtract out $400,000 there, we have net available or a net available of somewhere between $300,000 and $350,000. And then what I did is I said, well, what about a fourth staff, whether it's fire captain or engineer? Because what we see in fire departments a lot is you have three individuals staffing a shift, one goes on vacation, other people get paid overtime. Fire departments are really famous for having to incur a lot of overtime as individuals. So by having a fourth staff, even though it costs more, it's going to have, you know, shift coverage for overtime, reduce the cost of overtime. You have that extra person on board to help with training because you're going to be heavily reliant on reserves and volunteers. Ultimately, though, the ability to fund a fourth position is really going to depend on what a budget looks like from one year to the next. Because if a fourth position is funded, then that means we have $175,000 to $350,000 available for everything else. The annual debt service on a fire engine is about $75,000 a year. And then we've got all the hoses and all the other equipment.
How many engines would we have? One?
Yeah, Oceana would just...
We'd have one engine. And
we'd have one
fire
engine.
Captain.
Yeah.
Truck.
Don't you have to have fire engineers?
Well,
I assume the captains are going to be driving the trucks?
Yeah. I mean, you would really have no choice. The captains would have to be driving the trucks. And the second responders or the second individuals on shifts are going to be reserves or volunteers. But this is the basic scenario that we're looking at in terms of our staffing levels. And this is why some of the fire professionals just shake their head and say it's not going to work.
We would get some equipment from Five Cities Fire Authority, right?
Yes, we would. And we would also have some debt that goes along with that equipment. So, again, what's left over is $175,000 to $350,000 a year to cover everything else. Means that, you know, realistically, what Oceano could afford based on existing funding is a fire chief, a shift of captains, maybe another, you know, professional level individuals. But after that, it's heavily reliant on, again, volunteers and reserves or paid call firefighters.
Kind of looks like the fire department Oceano had it 20 years ago.
Well, and that sort of makes sense, right? Because that same level of funding is what, you know, we've roughly, that property tax allocation is roughly the same.
Trying to think how much the...
Okay, so then I kind of led in also, what are the other costs that we'd have for reserves and volunteers for a fire engine, equipment and supplies, and for housing? Before I really get into the next, in the staff report, though, I did identify a community, Twain Hart Community Services District, up in the mountains, close proximity to Sonora. Happens to be that an ex-public works official named Tom Trott left the area, went back to his hometown, became the CSD general manager there. Saw him at the recent conference. We're talking about fire. And lo and behold, their fire department budget is closely approximating Oceano's available funding. Lo and behold, they have a fire chief. They have three shift captains. They rely heavily on intern programs. It's an agency that is out there that might be one of the best comparative examples to what Oceano would be facing. Now, as Vice President White had described, well, different scenarios. They're up in the mountains, we're down here. What kind of risks? How do they do their internship programs? Would we have those same possibilities here? But if we're going to do some comparisons to other agencies in San Luis Obispo County, then I want to, you know, kind of reach out too and look at where are some of the other fire departments in the state that are about the same size and how do they operate and what are some of their challenges.
Our housing out here, does that belong to OCSD or is that Five Cities Fire Authority?
That's Oceano's, yeah.
On that straight, okay.
Well, I think that if we're reestablishing, we also have to look at if we're reestablishing an independent fire district, again, is there going to be impacts on staffing? Right, because the fire chief's going to need an office.
Did he have one up here? Or well, is there an office up there?
Well,
not really.
No. That needs work.
Yeah.
It's more of a crow's nest, you know.
Yeah.
Lieberman's office is in Arroyo Grande.
Yeah.
So our conference room has the window and it has the setup to be able to provide the doors back into the fire station.
Okay.
So what information is most relevant to compile regarding divestiture, LAFCO, and county decisions? I think we've talked about some good questions that we'll work on for President Austin to send to the county. what information is most relevant to compile regarding reestablishing an independent fire department. Does your board want me to actually go through the rigors of trying to develop some concise budget estimates? Or is the big picture analysis good enough? Do we want to do comparisons to what other unincorporated communities in the county are facing? Templeton was an example that we talked a little bit about. Cambria was an example. And then what about others?
To do that. I think we should do that.
I like the idea also, like Twain Hart, of finding a couple that are in the circumstance that we would be in if we had to fund our own fire department. You know, up in that north area where the Santa Rosa fire devastated so much area, there was lots of small fire departments. And they did their best.
Okay, I think that's a really good example. I mean, Twain Hart was sort of a coincidental example. Twain Hart was kind of a coincidental example. I think looking to the fire departments that were near the campfire and some of the more devastating fires we've recently seen would be a good one as well. One of my underlying concerns when I saw what happened up in Santa Rosa and the impacts of a wind change and everything, in talking with some of our local responders, you know, I posed the question, how well are the services in some of those areas truly coordinated? Because I've had years of experience of working with county's emergency response and part of the training associated with Diablo Canyon. And every single emergency drill that I've been involved in, we simulated changes in wind directions. And we simulated what was going to happen with the radioactive plume and what areas are going to be impacted if wind directions changed and how fast we would need to be able to respond. What happened up in Northern California in Santa Rosa with the changes in wind directions, it really begs the question as to how well those separate independent fire departments were really coordinated and really anticipating what do we need to do if there is a change in wind direction. So I think bringing in examples from that area, and I'll research them to say how large were those, how reliant were they, and how ready were they really, how ready were they to respond in a major incident and coordinate, because that's simply a risk, you know, of a small independent fire district. Is being able to do that kind of coordination. One of the things that we have to be careful about, especially as, you know, the public agency, is where we have this prohibition about advocating one way or another, advocating for a yes vote or advocating for a no vote, is it's okay to identify risks, but from the district perspective, I don't think we can embellish them too much, right? We just have to, you know, talk about, okay, this is a station that's Twain Hart. This is a station up in Santa Rosa. These were their staffing levels. These are the comparisons to other agencies in San Luis Obispo County. Do the best job as we can in turn doing a comparison and contrast. But in terms of that, some of that judgment type of determinations, those are really for the voters then to weigh in their own minds. And then here, comparisons to other similar local agencies. Last slide, but again, I think we just want to continue to reinforce, it's together the voters, it says votes, voters, property owners, elected officials, you know, will ultimately decide the future here for Oceano. I want to turn attention real quick then to the last page and keep it in the context here because in red we have some of the upcoming anticipated dates for additional discussions. And on July 24th, where we had our multi-year updated cost estimates, I think that's really going to get pushed to August 14th. And so, you know, we've got a little bit of flexibility on timing, but maybe for the next meeting, what we'll come back with is I can start with the comparison of the other local agencies in San Luis Obispo County, because we have Templeton, we have Cambria. We know what happened recently with Cayucas. Santa Margarita and San Miguel really aren't good comparisons because they are almost entirely volunteers, extremely limited funding. But it seems like that would maybe be the best next step to come back to your board and do some of those comparisons of the local agencies in San Luis Obispo County.
I know Santa Barbara County is all one county fire department, generally speaking. But what about Monterey County? Of course, I guess I was thinking of Soledad, Gonzales, some of those smaller towns. I don't know. They're probably bigger than Oceano, but I mean, I was thinking some of those towns face similar kind of maybe challenges.
I'd look
as
into
Oceano.
Gonzales and Soledad.
Huh?
Gonzales and Soledad would probably be good ones to check and see. What
I don't know. I'm asking if
they would be good ones to look at. Maybe.
I don't know.
So some of those are inland, right, and they have a lot higher temperatures. I would tend to look, if we're going to look at Monterey County, is what do we see some stuff that are on coastal communities in Monterey County? Yeah, Seaside, for example, might be a community.
Yeah.
What do they do there? It'd be interesting to see if some of those coastal counties in Monterey, do they have some sort of combined fire departments as well? Certainly, seven of them got together and did a combined wastewater treatment plant and recycle water facilities and groundwater injection. So they're known for doing some combined. So,
yeah. And I don't know about Ventura County. I think all the communities are bigger down there.
Yeah, Ventura County, I think, starts, to me, my impression, we start getting into the more megapolis of L.A. and, you know, the more intense urban areas.
More money.
Yeah.
Money available. Yeah. I would be interested in some of these other fire departments if they also respond every time an ambulance responds.
So service level questions.
Service level questions. And percentages of medical. And if they're paramedics or just EMTs. That's a freighter coming through.
Could we also have some information about how it would work to staff a station partly with volunteers? I mean, I assume they're not free. There's got to be training costs or...
Yeah.
I don't understand exactly how that would work, so I'd like some clarification.
Like, do you mean like reserves? We could do reserves.
Well, yeah, and so like, for example, Twain Hart, because they have one fire chief, three captains, and the rest of them are through an intern. How do they implement that program? And Tom said, he goes, give me a call and I'll spend as much time talking about what we do there. And Carrie, I think they have a community college or a...
Columbia Community College. They called them interns out of there.
Yeah.
And they work with the community college because they have a fire program there.
See, we have one close by.
Yeah, and we have Alan Hancock, right?
Yeah.
So that was also one of the reasons why I kind of stirred my thoughts in terms of maybe that is a good analogy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, should we open this or are we done?
Yes.
So any other comments from the board? Do you want to open it for public comment then on this item? Is there any public comment? I'm sure there is.
Giselle Naylor, Oceano homeowner. I would have liked to hear more from the people that actually live in Oceano, which is you people up there. The general manager doesn't live in Oceano. This is not a subject for getting an ad hoc committee together. And from what I heard, there were two people on an ad hoc fire committee. That's not the way to go. Unless you're all Einsteins, no offense to any math whizzes on the board, for you guys to crunch the numbers, it's a job in itself. And the fire departments are very good at going for grants. So if you want to crunch numbers, you know, maybe you should establish a genuine statutory advisory committee to actually deal with this problem. What I hear is, do we want local or do we want state? We've got a state system that is, you know, satellite communications from San Diego north to Oregon, and yet we're still arguing about keeping local fire departments. Me, as a homeowner, for 20 years I've been in Oceano, I've had to call the fire department for real fire hazards, get transferred to Grover Beach, and they have been non-responsive, even when by statute they should have done something. But they'll send a truck out belatedly and do nothing. So there's all that expense with nothing, no service provided. I picked up the phone since our calls are now going to Cal Fire, and they have responded. Not only have they responded, but their dispatch has actually cited statutory conditions under the types of fires they can respond to. So if somebody's lighting a fire literally within 5 feet of a shed in an alleyway, they can tell me, yes, we can respond under these conditions, and yes, you know, if they're transients, they're allowed to have a warming fire, but it can't be completely uncontained 3 feet high. Proposition 218 has been described in this talk, this 1 hour talk or whatever, as a right to vote on taxes. Oh, no. No, statewide voters have a right to vote when it's on a ballot and you've got public records. When you have a community service district, you don't have public records the way the state keeps track of their expenditures and their other public records. So Proposition 218, just as an example, 8 people voted to raise our water and sewer fees, and 7,000 people in Oceano didn't. And those 8 people got to raise the water and sewer fees, and under the guise of improving the pipes in the street. And instead, they tripled payment to the general manager.
Your time's up. Thank you.
Just real briefly, President Austin, and sort of, I'm not going to try to respond to all the details of that public comment and the misinformation. The Proposition 218, though, was specifically called the Right to Vote on Taxes Act. And that's what's going to happen in March 2020.
Thank you. Okay. And no other comment? Then we will move on. Received written communications. Do you have anything, Paula? Late received written communications.
I had earlier in my report just sort of characterized some of the emails that Chief Lieberman and I have been sharing with regard to the recent July 4th activities.
Future agenda items, see the board meeting timeline. I think we've been gone over that. When is our next meeting scheduled?
Let's see. Our next meeting is on the 24th of July.
July 24th.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll also work to start filling this out on other types of agenda items that we're going to be facing through the rest of the calendar year. In 2020, there's legislation that is going to change the rules on shutting people's water off if they don't pay bills. So we're going to need to, have both study session and consideration of formal ordinances or resolutions on addressing that new legislation.
Okay, well, if that's anything else, then I can move that we adjourn.
I make a motion we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned.
Stay here to pay it, sign the checks.